So if you're just joining us, we've been in a series called The New You, which is all about this letter in the New Testament called Colossians. Okay, Paul writes this letter to this group of people who live in this town called Colossae, and he just writes them about what it means to follow Jesus, some things that need to go, some things that need to change, all those different things. And we've just been working our way through that. And after today, we got a couple weeks left working through this incredible letter. And this is where we were last week, that following Jesus starts with new life and leads to continual changes to the way we live. Last week was all about put off. In fact, at one point, Paul says, put to death, okay? Just not put off. You got to kill this stuff, because this stuff's going to wreck your life and it's going to mess you up, so put it to death. And then it was just this image of take off, take off, take off, get rid of, get rid of, get rid of. There's just things that we just need to get rid of when we're following Jesus, because it's not just that he raises us to new life, but then it's constant changes to the way that we live. And that's what following Jesus is really all about. So here's where you are if you're looking on a map. If you'd get on a plane today, you would go to modern day Turkey and you could go to the town of Colossae. It is still there. Much of it is unexcavated as far as what the old world was like, but you can go there today, and that's where the Jesus message comes to this group of people who have just learned what it means to follow Jesus. And that's kind of where we are on our journey. You can go at any point and kind of catch up on our website. I would encourage you, if you use the Bible app, to open that up, because I'll have all the verses that we are going to be looking at today. And really today is this, and I really want to start with this idea that Christianity is all about relationships. It's very relational, okay? So what Jesus does is not just say, okay, you need to pray this prayer and fix your life, and it's relational. He invites us into a relationship with him. And then on top of that, okay, he encourages us to be a part of other people who are following him and be a part of a church, because he's all about relationships. Christianity is all about relationships. It's not figured out on your own, hope you make it, hope you deal with everything. It is God invites us to relationship with him, and he's done everything to make that work through Jesus, dying on the cross and raising again. And then he invites us, hey, be a part of a church where other people are in the same journey you are, following Jesus, because Christianity is all about relationships. And every time Christianity forgets that, okay, every time we forget that as Christians, it is trouble, it is a mess. And all of a sudden, it's not about our relationship with God, it's trying to earn it. And everybody's trying to follow rules, and everybody's trying to one-up one another on good works, and it's all about, what can I do to please God? That's not relational. Relationship is Jesus invites us into this journey with him. And then in the church, when we forget about that, it is devastating. So today's really going to be about this whole idea of relationships and what it looks like to have relationships within the church. How do we do life together as a church? Now, the verse we're going to look at today and the verses that we're going to uncover, if you put these into practice, they would totally change your house, okay? They would totally change your home. They would change the way things go, but this wasn't written for a family and a house. If you were to do these at work, let's say you have influence and you're like, okay, we're just going to figure out how to make everybody do this stuff at work. It would totally change your workplace. But this wasn't written for the workplace. It was written for a church and for relationships in that church and how people who come together, because we're all following Jesus, how we do life together when at times we're very, very different. So I want you to see this verse as we get started this morning, okay? Since God chose you to be the holy people he loves, you must clothe yourselves. So remember last week was put to death and get rid of, get rid of, get rid of. Now, and this is the way Jesus works. He doesn't just tell you to get rid of stuff without telling you different stuff to put on and different stuff to pursue. So now that you've gotten rid of that other stuff and you've put it to death, clothe yourself, put on tender-hearted mercy, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Because it's these five things that are going to make a difference with relationships inside this church. These five things are going to be the make or break things that are going to allow us to have healthy relationships inside this church of us who are following Jesus together. These are make or break. That's why he says you got to put them on. You got to put them on. Because if you don't, you're going to struggle. You're going to struggle in relationships with each other. You're going to struggle doing life together unless you put these things on. So I'd like to walk through them with you, okay, so that we all understand together what Paul is inviting us to put on as well in order for us as a church to really work, for relationships in here to thrive, for us to be able to work together when at times we are very, very different. And he starts with this one, tender-hearted mercy. Some of your translations have compassion, and really it's feeling compassion towards someone's difficult situation. Be very leery when your heart goes cold and you feel nothing when somebody else is in pain or is hurting. Be very leery of those moments. It probably means you're jaded and you're just cold because of things that's gone on in your life. Be very leery when that happens. Be very leery, be very cautious. When all of a sudden something bad happens, somebody goes, well, they probably deserved it, okay? If you think that first, oh, they probably deserved it, they probably did something, that's why they're having problems. If that's where you go first, probably a little short on tenderhearted mercy. I don't know. Sometimes we can just be a little short on it and not feel very much compassion towards someone's difficult situation. That means when an email goes out, okay, and those who are on the church email list, you know, and someone says, hey, Ed, can you send this prayer request about something that's going on? And it pops up, and you're like, oh, email, prayer request, and you read, oh, wow, that's really tough. I can't believe they're going through that. That is tender-hearted mercy, feeling compassion towards someone's difficult situation. Do you do that? Is that what happens when you first receive news of, again, what's going on in here with someone else? What's happening in their life? What's happened in their family? What's happened with them? Is that where you first go and go, oh, man, wow. You feel compassion towards their difficult situation. Now, here's incredible. We're not just supposed to stop there. By feeling compassion, look at the very next one he stops at, kindness. This is action towards someone's difficult situation, okay? So he puts these two together. Not only should your heart be moved, you're like, wow, I can't believe they're going through that. But the very next one is kindness, which says it's not enough just to say, oh, I can't believe they're doing that. It's now, what can I do? What can I do? How can I act? What is something I could do to help them in the midst of their difficult situation? And at times, this is really difficult, okay? This is really, really difficult, isn't it? There's just times we just don't know what to do, right? And most of us, come on, most of us have been trained that, gosh, when something happens, I need to offer some sort of food, right? And then where we go, I need to offer some sort of food. I cannot tell you how many of you called, texted me, and I kept saying the same thing after my mom died. And I kept saying, there's two of us. Stephen's at college, okay? We don't need about 10 lasagnas. Yes, Stephen can eat those, okay? I don't need to eat those, okay? We don't need that. So because all of you, that is it just, isn't that where we go? Isn't that where we go? And I'm telling you, being on the other side of that for me was very helpful. Because isn't it true we just say, you know, because I've said this 100 times too. Oh, just let me know whatever I can do. I've been on the other side. You know what? I don't know what to tell you to do. Isn't that really hard? I don't know. I'm getting these texts, reading this email. I don't know. I have no idea what to tell you to do. Okay? Because I was on the other side of that for a moment, and I recognized there's just times when we're not going to know what to do. There are times we're not going to do. And kindness pushes us to say, do something. Do something. Get creative. Okay, but do something, and in doing something, demonstrates that it's not just I'm feeling compassion toward your difficult situation. I'm actually going to do something and act in some sort of way. Number three, humility. Using your strengths and gifts for the good of others. See, you need to understand, in Colossae, nobody practiced humility. Humility was not a pillar everybody wanted to be, okay? It wasn't a characteristic everybody wanted. In fact, it was the opposite. It was honor. Everything you do is about honor. So you tried to find the right person to marry so it would elevate your status. And you wanted the right job to elevate your status and the right place to live to elevate your status. And everything was about elevating your status. And then if you open Philippians chapter 2, where Paul tries to speak into a Roman culture that's all about honor and all about elevating your status, and he tells us that Jesus lowered his status. And you read it and you're like, who would do that? Nobody does that. Nobody takes their status. It says Jesus had the status of being equal with God, and he didn't even consider that something to grasp. But he made himself nothing, taking the very form of a servant. So what Jesus does, differently from everybody else who's trying to up their status, he lowers his and becomes a servant to us. He uses his strengths and gifts for the good of others. Jesus is the only one who could take our sin. He's the only one who could take our place. And so he takes that strength. He takes what only he can do, and he gives it for the good of others. And he lowers his status. And sometimes, you know what? To make relationships work, we got to be willing to lower our status and use our strengths and our gifts for the good of others. Gentleness. Gentleness is all about disposition, or I should say, it's all about the attitude in which you do something, okay? That's why I just put refusing to be harsh or inflammatory, because sometimes trying to be kind and trying to help people, sometimes we just get a little frustrated, don't we? And we get a little harsh, and we get a little inflammatory, and we get, you know, our attitude stinks, okay? So it doesn't matter if you're trying to act out of kindness. If your attitude is terrible, everybody can recognize that, right? Everybody can recognize that. So now he's going to run after the attitude. Hey, there's an attitude of getting along, and that's an attitude of gentleness. So how can I refuse to be harsh or inflammatory? And sometimes, isn't it true, we just need to shut our mouths and not let that stuff come out and figure out how we can best help one another in the situations that we find ourselves in. Patience is the last one. Now, normally when we think of patience, we think of what? Being behind the person in line at high B who can't read, they're only supposed to have 12 items. They have a cart full, and you're right behind them, okay? And you're like, I gotta wait. We normally think of that as patience, okay? The person, the light turns green, and you know they're on their phone because they're sitting like there, and you're like, oh, I want to honk the horn, but my wife will smack me if I do, okay? So I don't want to do that, and that's patience. No. We're going to talk about relational patience, okay, for a moment. Instead of you just having to wait for something, it is the virtue of dealing with an annoying person for an extended period of time without becoming nasty or writing them off. I absolutely love this definition when I read it this week. I'm like, this is perfect, right? The virtue of dealing with an annoying person for an extended period of time without becoming nasty or writing them off. Because here's what happens, right? We walk into a church and we start doing life together and we start realizing there are some people that, God bless them, they're just annoying, right? We have different personalities. They operate on different schedules. They do things different ways. And if we're not careful, they just annoy us. And that annoyance over time just causes us at moments to write them off or to become nasty. Okay? But patience, Paul would say, means no, we don't do that to one another. Not inside this church. We do not do that to one another. Not inside this group of Jesus followers. We don't do that. We don't write people off. Even though they're bugging us and they're annoying us and we can't stand them. And how on earth did God create anybody with a personality like that? And right? All these different things that we go through. And it says, no, I am going to refuse to write them off. And I'm going to refuse to become nasty to them no matter what happens, no matter what takes place. So why is this so hard? It's so hard because of what I just talked about. That's why it's so hard. It's so hard because at times we are so different. It's hard because at times we recognize we are so different and we're so different from one another. And then there is what happens when someone else hurts us. What happens when someone else hurts us? We're in a small group and we share a prayer request. And we're like, you know, please don't spread this anywhere. By the time you get home, it's on Facebook and you're like, oh my goodness, what happened? Okay, somebody didn't hear that and, you know, and just it was out and you're really frustrated and I don't know what I'm going to do, but I'm never in that small group again. And there's, right, there are just, I'm just telling you, you're in a church long enough, you're going to bump up with somebody and be offended. So isn't it interesting where Paul goes exactly to the next place? Make allowances for each other's faults and forgive anyone who offends you. He says, guess what? When you do life together, you got to create space. And you've got to lower this expectation that everybody's going to behave and everybody's going to do everything right and everybody's going to see everything in the Bible the same way you are. You got to get rid of that expectation because that expectation is going to ruin that relationship because then you have no space. Then you have no space for anybody just being human and messing up and at times doing things wrong. And he says, forgive anyone who offends you. Why? Why would we do that? Remember, the Lord forgave you. You must forgive one another. Oh, yeah, that's right. I've been forgiven. So in turn, I am pushed and asked to forgive. I am pushed and asked to forgive. That I'm supposed to remember that sits the cross and the empty grave. It reminds me I have been forgiven. I have been forgiven of everything. And I'm supposed to do that for other people. Remember, right now, all he's talking about is people that we do life together in the church. That we have got to learn what it means to forgive one another. Because we are going to mess up. And in messing up, we will hurt one another. In messing up, we're going to offend somebody else. And we have got to be willing to forgive because Christ forgave us. Now, let's talk about this morning one more big challenge in all of this. One of the big challenges in all of this is that we are so different. Many of us have different backgrounds, different situations. We root for different sports teams. We do a lot of things different. We don't work in the same fields. We have kids of different ages. Some of us kids are out of the house. Some of us are on grandkids, right? We're in different stages of life. And so it can seem at times there is not a lot we have in common. So consider for a moment. This would be a typical Roman structure. This is probably a typical house of a more, okay, of what we would consider maybe a little bit above upper class person in Colossae, okay? This is what you would see, okay? Here is their courtyard. This art, our artist rendering of this, the person used their courtyard for their garden, okay? The person used their courtyard for their garden, okay? What happens so often is that these courtyards were used by local congregations, okay? They didn't have buildings like ours, okay? So someone in the church who was following Jesus and had this kind of space, okay, didn't grow a garden or anything, and this is where everybody was. So just imagine you are walking by and you kind of peek through the kind of space that goes into the courtyard, and you look in there and you're like, what on earth is going on here? Because you see all these different groups that in their day were never together. I mean never. There's no place socially that these people would ever, ever meet. But there they are in the church. And Paul talks about it. Okay? Paul refers to it. In this new life, it doesn't matter if you are Jew or Gentile, circumcised or uncircumcised. Both of those are the same part. Okay? So he goes, the first thing you would do is you'd look in and go, wait a minute. I know they're a Jew. And I know they're not a Jew. What on earth are they doing together? Jews don't eat with Gentiles. Everybody knew that in the Roman world. And yet, to peek through this courtyard at this church that's meeting, there's a Jew and there's a Gentile. What on earth are they doing together? Because they didn't do anything together. They weren't part of any life together. If you read enough about the way the temple was set up, if you were a Gentile, you were way on the outside of the temple. You could only get so close. Okay? So everything about their life is separate. But now here comes Jesus, and now all of a sudden, this group of Jesus followers is a Jew, and there's a Gentile, and they're in the same group. How on earth can we explain that? It says barbaric. Okay? This is not Conan, by the way. Okay? It's not. Okay? What this really means is somebody who struggled with the Greek language. The Greek language was the language of the day. It was the unifying language. Okay? You normally had some sort of home dialect in the region that you lived in, but everybody learned Greek. Well, not everybody, because not everybody went to school. Not everybody learned it. Not everybody was able to figure it out. And so there were times when it was hard to understand people because they struggled learning the Greek language. And it sounded like what they were saying was bar, 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 bar. And they'd be called the barbarians, or as we call them, the barbarians. That's why they're barbaric. Okay? Because they can't learn the language. And they would go by and go, wait a minute, I know that guy. I can barely understand. What is he doing in that group? The uncivilized. Some of your translations will say Scythian. And all it means is a place north of Colossae where people just didn't have the same manners, didn't do the same things. Okay? And you'd be like, oh my goodness, what are they doing in the group? Okay? And one of the biggest ones, the last two, slave or free. And what this meant is people who owned slaves and people who were slaves. They didn't do anything together. And yet here, peeking into the courtyard at the church, well, I know who that guy is, and I know who they are. How on earth are they together? They aren't together in anything in our culture. Because what does Paul say? Christ is all that matters. And he lives in all of us. All that stuff that mattered in Rome went out the window when it came to, you know Christ, I know Christ. We have something very powerful in common. All that other stuff went out the window. And people saw that and were startled that these people of different backgrounds and different economic situations and different times and different cultures and different languages at the time, they all did church together. And it was incredibly powerful to the people who watched, who maybe stopped and who looked into the courtyard to see the people gathered for these people following this guy, Jesus. But man, they are so diverse. They are so different. How on earth are they able to do life together? Because above all, clothe yourselves with love, which binds all things together in perfect harmony. You know, Jesus understood what would be and should be the defining characteristic for every single church, because he talked about it in John chapter 13. When he says, so now I'm giving you a new commandment, love each other. Let me tell you, the disciples already heard this, it didn't feel new, okay? Just as I have loved you, you should love each other. Your love for one another, and I love this word, will prove to the world that you are my disciples. That's how people know we're following Jesus, is how we take care of one another. And if we don't do that well, nobody understands that we're following Jesus. That's all Jesus is telling us. You don't love one another, you are not helping anybody identify who you really are. But for people who follow me, they ought to learn what it is to love one another. So I try to figure out a way to kind of bring this all together so just we can end on this common, some sort of point together, and it's just this. Christ is the only bond strong enough to hold us together. If you're hoping for something else, it doesn't work. It just doesn't work. Everything else falls apart. We are too different, okay? And that's okay, because that's what a church should be. It should be filled with people of all sorts of different backgrounds, all sorts of different race, all sorts of socioeconomic situations, all sorts of backgrounds, all sorts of things that they've done, all sorts of places they've been. It should be filled with all of that. You know why? Because it demonstrates that Christ is the only bond strong enough to bring us together. That's what it demonstrates for everybody else. Like, what? how are you people together? You vote differently, okay? You live differently, you do things differently. How on earth are you together? Because Christ is the only bond strong enough to bring us together. And I think at times we just forget that. And we start looking around and go, well, I don't have much in common with them. I don't think I need to be in a small group or class or any type of situation. I have nothing in common with them. You have Christ. When you have Christ in common, it is more important than anything else there could ever be. And if we would start seeing one another that way, we would understand that what binds us together is strong enough than what causes us to be apart. And it would revolutionize our church if we just saw one another that way. So I'm going to pray tomorrow. I'm going to ask God to help us to do that, because this is not easy. This is hard. It was hard for them. It was hard for them. Can you imagine the other slaves in the room who know, well, these people own us. Why are they in this room? Because you have a stronger bond than who owns you. You have a stronger bond than someone who has more money than you. You have a stronger bond than somebody who is more educated than you. You have a stronger bond with someone who has things so different from you. Different jobs, different situations, different places. You have nothing in common. You have everything in common in Christ. And I think we just need to remember that. And remember that is what holds us together. So I'm going to invite you to stand. We're going to worship God together. And I want to pray for us before we do that this morning.